It's Monday, so it's Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, it's sort of a lull in the market at the moment. Okay, we're down on the JSE, having been pottering around unchanged for most of the day, but the US markets as well. It's almost as though we're waiting for something to happen, and I wonder what that might be.
There's a lot. I think this week, I don't think you can make up your mind. I think one thing that identifies or characterizes, is a better word, 2019, is that it's very difficult to second guess what's going to happen. We really don't know where the world is heading in many respects. So this week we're still involved in the Chinese US trade talks. That's reaching a critical point at the moment. You've got job numbers, you've got the Fed. I think GDP numbers are waiting for GDP numbers. Brexit's still uncertain, and so it goes. And then corporate results, I also think that a very important week, because we get all the tech companies reporting, and they can sway the market in a big way. So I think for choice, investors have decided to just stay back and let's see how this week goes through. But I mean, it's not an easy week in which to do anything. I've been looking. I know the U.S. markets are going to open soon, and looking to maybe lose up to 1% after a very good Friday. So that's the kind of mood that we're in now. You really don't know from one day to the next where you're going to be.
Yeah, and so what do? You just sit on your hands, because the thing that I find, and I've mentioned this before in two previous interviews with you actually, is that December was terrible, and it's almost as though people have used the excuse, the psychological excuse of 2019, a new calendar year, to say, forget about December, let's get down to it, let's be confident, let's buy things. And all the stuff that we sold in December, we buy back. But I can't see the justification for it just yet.
No, I agree with you. You know, I think that if you look at a business and you feel that it's the forefront of tech, it's coming out with either a new drug or a new machine or a new chip or something innovative, and you might want to take a punt on it, you know, by all means, go for it. Or if you find that they might have knocked something to down quite significantly, and you might get a decent yield on a very steady or stable company, go for it. But I don't think you can buy the broad market at this stage. It's just too uncertain. No one's quite sure. There's no synchronized growth. And I think that if anything, you need, you just need a move in the right direction in the world. You need maybe America to get its politics right, if we are going to get it right, certainly in the next 2 years. Brexit, you know, some clarification. Europe, some clarification. And the big one, China. I think that's the big one. Lindsay, that can make a big difference to everything. That has been the powerhouse economy over the last decade. And they seem to be flirting with stimulus, but nothing of significance, nothing. You know, I can't make it out. It takes many forms every day. But there is a desire to get it going. But, they're shying away from the way that they used to do it, which was infrastructural spending, or spending on property, spending on real estate. So I think maybe everyone's waiting for something to come out of China. But at the moment, hesitancy around China also dictating the moods of the market.
Never mind that. What about South Africa? I mean, I keep on seeing these tweets from the EFF and the ANC say, please register so you can vote in May. I don't know. I think Helen Ziller sent a tweet out a couple of days ago saying, if anyone votes for the ANC, then they are being disloyal to South Africa because of the corruption that is still ongoing. I think it's a slightly, obviously, a politicized tweet. But on the other hand, even if I had the right to vote, which I don't as a non-South African citizen, I don't know who I'd vote for. In fact, I'd probably spoil my vote, because I don't think that any of the parties cover themselves in any glory whatsoever.
I think that's why the vote is to maybe not give it to the ANC and make sure that they learn to behave themselves. You don't want them to have an overwhelming victory where, you know, they go up to that 65-66%. So I think, I'm not suggesting EFF, but for that reason, I think one's got to just give the DA some kind of support. That they're at 15-16%, or get them up to 17-18-20%, just to hold back, and also to send a message for the very reason that you have you know, that you mentioned.
They don't have a leader, though. I mean,
I'm
not going to talk about politics, but there's no one that you say, goodness me, okay, that chap over the next 5 years or that woman over the next 10 years is going to take them to 25 to 30% of the vote. It's an anemic party.
Lindsay, with the ANC who keeps standing on their toes, kicking the ball into their own net, I don't think they could have been worse. I mean, it's what they have done is appalling. I'm not even getting emotional. I mean, it's not even an emotional outcry from me, which is political. It's just when you see the Zondo Commission and you see the corruption and the level of corruption that they can actually remain in power is an absolute mystery. And therefore, any opposition party should have been able to pick up their votes, which the DA have not done.
Exactly.
You know, you say, what do you want?
Yeah, how much more do you need?
You've got to. If there was a sign from above, this is it.
I think the only thing is the legacy issue, because people, and also the benefits issue as well, because we are a social welfare state, and people vote for the ANC because the ANC, let's not make any bones about this, they delivered people from the cruelty of apartheid. Sure. So you vote for them because your dad voted for them, your mum, worked with them in the old days, but I think it's going to take another generation for people to realize that that is not the ANC of today.
No, definitely not. Not when you see how what they've taken from the country and so on. Also, I think there are also signs which have disturbed me. I mean, Ramaphosa has come out in support of Zimbabwe, saying they're on the right track. You know,
I haven't heard that. I mean, I would have brought that up with somebody. What did they say?
He came out in support that, you know, they're going the right way and from a democratic point of view. I can't remember the exact quote, but basically endorsing the party and saying, hold on a sec, are you aware of what's happening in your neighbor? The other thing is that one of the biggest farcical election was in the DRC. And again, Ramaphosa has come out and said, no, you must go with the law, and you know, not criticizing what's happened there. So you started to say, all it's done is brought a lot of criticism against Africa and against its leaders.
It's almost like Bolivia, the Soviet Union, and China supporting the Venezuelan dictatorship as well. It's almost like that, because it's patently wrong.
Totally. And if anything, if ever you wanted to attract outsiders and Ramaphosa's gone to Davos, or he's going out with his new who are trying to attract investment here, and yet he's endorsing the elections in both DRC and also the attitude and the clampdown of in Zimbabwe. So you've got ANC as well. You've got what's happening here, and not a murmur, unless this man is a complete and total liar, which I don't think he is. A greasy, what's his name? A greasy?
Yes.
Is it right? Whatever he has. But he's been testifying for how many days? 7 days. He can't make that up. Nobody could learn a script like that. That's a whole mini series. you know what I mean? You couldn't learn that script. So
talking about mini series,
there's got to be some element of truth there.
Talking about miniseries, Davos has come and gone, and I didn't speak to one person about Davos. I used to get emails saying, would you like to speak to this person because he's there or she's there, etc. And there was no Theresa May, there was no Emmanuel Macron, there was no US delegation. Mr. Trump decided not to go because he doesn't like leaving his home, let's face it. He's an old boy, and he doesn't like getting out and being confronted by people. But there's a couple of journalists from South Africa were there with their normal sycophantic crowing to Cyril Ramaphosa. I loved it. Yeah, I love Cyril, etc. And it was a feel-good thing, which is great. But I don't think Davos has really got much relevance anymore after this year.
I don't know. I paid virtually zero attention. And just listening to, I always have a TV screen on here, mainly Bloomberg's. And, you know, listening there, it just seemed to be a drone of the same stories, worrying about China. I suppose for a couple of businessmen who come from the U.S., it gives them a chance to get together and discuss issues without planning a meeting. You know, they bump into each other and discuss things. That's fine. From that point of view, I still think, you know, it might have relevance. But I think from a political point of view, even business point of view, I'm not sure what comes out of that. Also, Lindsay, very, very limited coverage, you know, in most of the press and media. I'm sure they sent someone out there, an article was written, but I don't think it attracted attention, and nor did it make front page.
No, it really didn't.
Do we have front page anymore? I don't know.
I don't know anymore either. And the reason I go on about Davos is because I'm jealous because no one ever invites me. But I do.
Well, I think you've missed it. I think if you get the next, once they start inviting you, Lindsay, then you know it's over. You know.
Thanks very much.
That happened to me with Discovery, the same thing, you know, today. They invited me to their conference, you know, they had Hillary Clinton, they had David Cameron recently, et cetera. And I was invited, you know, 4 days as a leader of the community or a spokesman or some kind of, I don't know what they said about me. And they said, you know, we've given you a free ticket to come. I said, hold on a sec. Once you're starting to see me freebies and that, you're really dredging the bottom for a crowd.
You're looking for a seat filler there, yeah. Exactly right. Now, you mustn't be hard on yourself, David. You're a fine delegate.
Now forget it. I know who I am.
Okay. David, let's look at the market today. We talked about politics and Davos and whinged on about certain things. Let's have a look. Just looking at the top five major moves before the market closes as we pre-record this interview.
Yeah.
Iron ore up 7%.
Yeah.
What is that?
Vale.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. No, Lindsay, this is the second time. Remember 2015, the dam burst there?
Yes.
They, with their JV with Billiton, cost them billions of rands in restitution and to rehabilitate the whole community. And lo and behold, less than 4 years later, another dam wall breaks, etc. 50 people missing, 50 people dead, and hundreds more missing. Mm. And this is going to, their shares are down, I don't know, 20%. But, Vale is a very big producer. So they're going to have to cut production. And, of course, that sent the iron ore price up by, I don't know where, 78. Probably, I don't know how many percentage points are up, but it has spiked. I'm just trying to look now. It's always difficult to get the trading price of iron ore because it's not like a gold or anything like that. But
this isn't just a once-off. This is not like an income statement aberration or something that you can say, well, this was a once-off and our results will be affected by it. This is going to go on for a long time. They're not going to get that facility up and running for years.
No, and the fines are going to be very heavy. Good. They've held back on their dividends. They're not fine. The fines will be very heavy simply because of the previous dam wall breaking as well, which was in 2015. So because of that, I think they're going to get very, very heavy fines. So it's going to be difficult. But it has helped I'm just looking at the markets have opened significantly down. Lindsay, down, the 1.5% in the US, in the US now, which is a big move.
Caterpillar numbers were part of that. And although Caterpillar is an old school stock, it's still a bellwether and people still watch it. And people are suddenly taking notice. Is. And that's what worries me. People are sensitive to any bad news at the moment after the rally we've seen so far this year.
Because we haven't recovered from last year. Caterpillar is a Dow stock. So it's the one of the Dow 30. So if Caterpillar comes down 7-8%, remember, this is not a weighted average. This is an average. It's a Dow Jones Industrial Average. So and it's calculated in a funny way. I think the higher the share price, the more significant it is. It's not on Dunn and market cap. So I think a collapsing Caterpillar is going to have a huge impact on the Dow. So Dow down, when the Dow goes down, so does the S&P and so do the other indices. In fact, as we speak, Caterpillar now trading down 8%.
Wow.
So that's a big, big move downwards. And it's hit Barlow World here. You know, Barlow World's a local distributor. Barlow World, although, one of their big outlets is in Russia, which up to now has been very good, down 4% here. So I think through association, Barlow's are under a bit of pressure.
The retail sector has more or less wrapped up its trading updates, and we get the real results probably starting next week. Ital Tile, which makes toilets as far as I can see, has come out with a voluntary trading update. Their results out very soon. What do you say? What do you say when you look at the retailers? As a question I ask everybody, is it a buying opportunity or is there more pain to come?
I would reckon a bit more pain. Mm. When you read into the results, there's no hint that things are turning around. There's a lot of warnings about the weakness of the of household consumption. And I think there's no sense that things are turning in the right direction. So Pepco also came out as well. And if you focus on what they've, you know, those shares are down about 3.5%. If you focus on what lies ahead there, that they've increased their space, they've taken a lot more space, results also pretty down. And this is at the bottom end of the market. And this has been a pretty good reflection of what's happening at the lower end of the market. It's been quite resilient. But, the result also a bit iffy. It's hard to interpret them without comparisons. But, you know, revenue up about 6%, but like-for-like up 3.4%. But they did increase retail space of about 4%. So I think if you adjust for that, it's not the greatest result.
Retail space increased by 4% compared to the comparative quarter, and this is a three-month update to December the 31st. Clothing and general merchandise segment reported sales growth of 6.1%, which is okay, but you've got an inflation rate at the time of around about 5%, let's call it. Mm. And, it's uninspiring. That's the best I can describe it as.
Just as we talk now,
yes.
NVIDIA, which is, you know, NVIDIA makes these semiconductors which are used in gaming,
right.
Also gave warnings about fourth quarter. They're down about 17%. So I think that's another story doing a lot of damage to the UK, to the US market. And that 17% is quite hefty. Look, it's been a performer. It's been a massive performer last year, NVIDIA. One of the favorite stocks up to date, even in the year to date, NVIDIA has been up about 20%. So, I mean, it gives you an idea of how they've moved, and they've come down about 70%. So, I think that's going to do a lot of damage as well.
Dow Jones down 312 points at the moment, S&P down 27 points at 2637, but that is still 200 points off the low that we saw during December. So, we're still 200 points, which is about 8%, I think it is. Higher than we were, but that tells me that we could come down and make a double bottom, something like that. David, football? Carry on with the market stuff.
Lindsay, I think that's something that you're touching on. Yeah, the markets are skittish, and because of this, it's very difficult to go in. You know, it's very, very difficult to get too excited about it. Play it very, very carefully. Soccer,
or football, as we say in the
real world.
I think
there's only one side worse than mine.
Go on.
And that's got to be Spurs. So they were shocking yesterday. They were terrible.
Against Palace, you mean, yeah.
Yeah. Without their top players, and they've got some super players, you know, Harry Kane, Dele Alli, etc. Yes. And Eriksen as well. Great combination in that. But I think take the two of them out, they just looked very ordinary yesterday.
Well, if you want to talk about bad teams, just have sympathy for an Ipswich Town supporter who again lost. They've only won three games all season. But let's not go there. Let's talk about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, because the analogy I've used, I don't know whether it was with you or with somebody else, is that you take a fund manager and you give them 40 stocks, and the differing performances at the end of a season, let's call it, is astonishing because of their different weightings and different asset allocations, etc. So you take a team of stars at Manchester United, take them from one fund manager, i.e. Mourinho, to another fund manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they win 8 games on the trot. It says something about Solskjaer. He always smiles when he's talking. He always looks like a bright-eyed boy, whereas Mourinho was always sullen and snarly, and I didn't like that.
No, and I think that he's taken a fun attitude towards. He's like Jurgen Klopp. I like Jurgen Klopp as well. Yeah. You know, I've got great admiration. I'm not a Liverpool supporter, nor Man United, but you feel for the man. He gets after the game. He goes to the ref. He goes to the opposition. He thanks everybody. He smiles. You know, and you can see he enjoys what he's doing. Whereas Mourinho, you know, would just walk off, as you mentioned, sullen. And I like that in the manager. You know, I like it. Even if you lose the game, well done to the opposition. Yes, I know it's big money involved, etc. I think it's everybody's in the same game. And if both teams play well, you attract fans. you know, you attract outsiders, you attract, you benefit the game. And I think Oleg, he's doing that. Solskjaer's doing that.
Yeah.
You know, Man United is a massive, massive club. And with the players that they've got, you've got a feel for. I like him.
I do too.
I always liked him. He was just a nice character.
Don't like Manchester
really
United.
Nice character.
But yes, I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a really, really good, honest chap. And as for Jurgen Klopp, I like him as well. But we must never forget that he's a German. David Shapiro, thank you very much for your time. That was Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities.